Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wrong Room, Right Girl by Megan Wade. Narrated by Jack Callahan and Penelope Ann Rose. 1. Ash. There's only been a handful of times I've stood up at the front of a church, a brand new suit or tuxedo pinching at my waist as I stood tall, squared my shoulders, and sucked my gut the way my father always told me to. The first was as a teen for Dad's second marriage, then again for his third, and then for my sister's wedding a decade later. My younger sister's wedding, something my father kindly pointed out before my next bridal party foray at his fourth wedding. By then, my sister was already on her second marriage, and I was in my early 30s and still single. Things weren't so great between Dad and me at the time, and they hadn't been ever since I refused to follow in his footsteps into the family business. So, when I said that maybe I stayed single because I didn't want to fail at marriage as spectacularly as he had throughout his life, he declared that the final straw and wrote me out of his will. So, I didn't stand up at his fifth wedding, nor was I invited to it, thank God. And the next time my ugly mug graces the front of the church as a member of a right man's bridal party is today, for my cousin Tanner. He's the only other right male to give the family a middle finger salute and walk away from their media monopolistic billions to forge his own path. Besides my sister, who's now sworn off marriage after her second divorce before 30, Tanner is the only member of the Wright family I've kept in contact with over the years. So, I'm more than pleased to bear witness to his first, and definitely only, marriage to the very beautiful Ruby Casey. She's the love of his life, his co-host on their show, He Said, She Said, and an all-around awesome gal. Tanner is one very lucky man. As happy as I am for my cousin, I'm also fucking jealous. Despite walking away from his guaranteed position at the top of the ladder in Wright Media in a spectacular burst of smoke and flames when he outed his own father as the deadbeat dad he is, Tanner landed squarely on his sexiest man alive feet. His radio talk show is the most listened to in the entire country, and worth millions in advertising revenue. The man just smiles, and someone offers him a $1 million deal. So he knows nothing of the struggle that comes with going against the family from the get-go. So, while I love the man, my naturally blue eyes are green as fuck. He's rich. He's good-looking. And despite coming from the same gene pool, next to him, I look like Humpty Dumpty after he fell off the wall. And that's not to say I'm hideous, or that I look like a smashed-up egg. It's just that I'm not pretty enough to win any sexiest man awards like my cousin. Sure, I could go to the gym a little more and eat a little less, but seriously, who has time for that shiz? And really, it wouldn't change much. It'll just make me look like the Hulk to his Bruce Banner. Not that Bruce Banner is particularly good-looking, but you get where I'm going. I'm a bruiser. He's a model. Nothing is going to change that. Back when I was working my way through college, dear old Dad cut me off when I refused to study business and media and chose engineering instead. I worked as a security guard, and then as a nightclub bouncer. I'm 6'4", and naturally barrel-chested. So it was the perfect job for me that also fit around my studies. If it wasn't for my baby face, I probably would have excelled at that too. Instead, I spent a lot of time proving I could hold my own, and let me tell you, fighting drunk assholes every night was not my idea of fun. I couldn't snatch my degree out of the Chancellor's hand fast enough. So long, Caltech. Now, I'm in my 40s, and I still look like a chunky kid. My sister says that she wishes she had my skin, but when I keep getting mistaken for a college grad when I'm going for a job interview, the baby face is a bit of a hindrance. I sport a beard just so I don't look prepubescent. But I digress. I'm supposed to be focusing on my cousin's wedding, not holding a pity party for one. It's just so damn hard not to sulk when you can hardly fucking breathe in this cummerbund. Why are they so tight? Why don't they make dress pants with elastic in the waist? Why do we even have to wear dress pants? When I get married, if I ever get married, we're doing it in our pajamas. Looking around the packed-to-the-rafters church, I take a deep breath, forcing the air to my chest instead of letting it flow into my stomach, willing the bridal music to start so this show can get on the road, and I can quit being on display and feeling so out of place. Not only is the groom the internet voted sexiest man alive, but his best man is Ruby's twin brother, who's almost as pretty as his sister. Then the third groomsman is a barista named Andy, who isn't helping me feel less obvious because I swear it's like he shrinks into himself and is using my size to hide behind. He's an interesting fella who only seems to have one topic in his repertoire, his girlfriend, Karen, who's a bridesmaid on the other side. I know that normally we'd have all met each other prior to now, but work commitments got in the way, and my flight from Atlanta was held up, so I only landed in Newark late last night. I've seen my hotel room for a couple of hours' worth of sleep, and then I came straight to the church after breakfast. And now, well, here we are. It's almost go time. "I'm so fucking nervous, and this isn't even my wedding," Theo whispers as he squares his shoulders, his jaw clenching as his eyes move to the double doors of the church when they open, preparing for the bride's procession to begin. "You're next, though, right?" I whisper, knowing he proposed to his long-term boyfriend, Darren, the night before. "Yeah." He glances at me and smiles. "I'm either crazy or in love. I'm not sure which yet." "I hope it's the latter," I say as Andy pops out from his hiding spot behind my left shoulder. "Between this wedding and the rock you gave Darren, Karen is going to get all kinds of ideas. She'll be on my case to propose before the day is out. I know it," he says, visibly sweating. "I don't understand why you haven't already proposed," Tanner whispers back to him. "You already live together, and from what I've seen, she owns you, man. Make it official." "She's also very scary, Tanner. You should know that since she's your PA," Andy retorts. Tanner's lips quirk before his attention snaps to the open doors, a hush falling over the entire room as the opening strains of the bridal march start playing. There isn't a forward-facing set of eyes on the church as Tanner's sister, my cousin, Camille, is wheeled down the aisle in her ribbon-clad wheelchair, a basket of rose petals tied to the armrest so her working arm can throw petals while Karen pushes her in time with the music. The joy in her eyes brings a tear to mine. She's the same age as me at 42, but she's been mentally disabled for most of her life and was previously hidden from the spotlight for reasons Tanner is better at explaining. But it's wonderful seeing her look so happy and free. Ash, she calls out, a huge grin spreading across her face as she waves at me. The entire congregation ripples with laughter. One thing you can say for Camille is that she spreads joy wherever she goes. It's her superpower. I wave back, of course, and when she makes it to the end of the aisle, I've been tasked with maneuvering her wheelchair into the tight space, so I take a quick moment to lean in and speak to her. Check you out, I say. The prettiest redhead in the room. I am. Camille's eyes light up. But only until Talia gets here. She's like the Barbie with red hair that Ruby got me for my birthday, she says, giggling before throwing her final handful of petals over my head. I blink, pulling back in surprise. That's wedding magic, Ash. It's also so you can find a wife, too. Oh, thank you, I say with a chuckle. I need all the help I can get. I know, she says, still smiling. It's because you're so old. I laugh a little louder than I intended at her honesty, but I can't fault her logic. I imagine I'm less and less of a catch the longer I remain single. Save me a dance at the reception, I say, smiling at her emphatic nod before I return to my position and await the rest of the wedding party. While I was helping out Camille, Darren has started walking down the aisle with Tanner and Ruby's 3-month-old boy, Bradley, in his arms. The baby has a tiny tuxedo on and a little pillow attached to his wrist that has the rings securely tied to it. Darren is also wearing a tuxedo, but he's jazzed it up with a bright pink half skirt that touches the floor behind him, a matching pair of pink stilettos and pink glitter eyeshadow that really contrasts with his ebony skin and the gold highlights he's brushed over his cheeks, nose, and chin. I glance at Theo, who's just watching his fiancée strut down the aisle with a look of awe on his face. See, I say, tapping him lightly with my elbow. You aren't crazy at all. Theo beams and nods, his eyes never leaving his love. Darren blows him a kiss and takes his position next to Karen and Camille, prompting us all to return our gaze to the entry doors. And that's when my jaw drops, and my entire mind goes numb as a tiny redhead enters. This is obviously the Talia Camille was talking about, because she really does look like a beautiful doll. Her red hair is curled and pinned on top of her head, with tendrils coiling down to touch her pale-skinned shoulders that look so soft and milky that my fingers itch to touch them. She's so tiny, I could wrap one hand around her waist and my fingers would meet in the middle. But she's also completely precious, and everything inside me feels like treasuring everything about her. My reaction is so visceral that I feel like dropping to my knees in front of her Wayne's World style and screaming, I'm not worthy! I'm not worthy! Failing that, a good rendition of Foxy Lady could also fit this moment. I'm completely blown away. Talia steps precisely to the music, smiling at those she passes like she's a member of the royal family and was born to be watched. She's wearing the same type of stilettos and half-skirt that Darren has on, but she's teamed it with a glittery, slate-gray dress that hugs her tiny frame and reflects the lights, making her look majestic as she moves. The touch of a finger at the base of my jaw, shutting my open mouth for me, snaps me out of my daze as I turn to Andy, who's giving me a knowing grin. I think I drooled a little too when Karen walked down the aisle. That's Talia, right? He nods. She's single. I shake my head. Way out of my league. That's what I thought about Karen when I met her, too. But she keeps choosing me. So I think I'm gonna ask her to marry me later. I thought you were scared of her. I am, he says. But I'd rather be scared of her all my life than live a single moment feeling anxious without her. My eyes move to Talia as I nod, wondering if there is any way on this earth a beautiful, doll-like creature could ever find herself attracted to a big, burly bastard like me. And when her eyes lock with mine, and a deep blush blooms in her cheeks, my insides flip, and I think that maybe, just maybe, Camille's wedding magic did something.
2. Talia. As the wedding vows are said, I get a little misty-eyed watching my bestie get married to the love of her life. Ruby and I have joked a few times about how grateful she is for my crappy taste in men. It was retaliating against a guy who dumped me right before my birthday that led to her and Tanner's first meeting. But I'd like to think that fate would have brought them together without a phallic symbol scratched into the hood of his Porsche, especially since he was the new owner of the radio station she was a board operator at. It would have only been a matter of time before their hearts collided. I know it. They're just too perfect for each other. Seeing them exchange rings and promise themselves to each other forever really makes me want that kind of happiness for myself. I want the kind of love that knocks your socks off, the kind of connection you know you can't live without. No more falling for arrogant guys with their flashy smiles and even flashier wallets. It never gets me anywhere but downtrodden, and I've had enough of that. Rich assholes have been my kryptonite for as long as I can remember. And it's not even the money that draws me in. I'm not that shallow. It's the asshole part that gets me. These guys that are so filled with confidence that they make me feel like I'm the luckiest girl in the world just to have been special enough to turn their head. A rich asshole walks into the room and he feels so unobtainable, so out of my league, that I go out of my way to impress him. It's pathetic, really. And the last time I let a rich asshole into my life, it almost cost Ruby her relationship with Tanner. I swore from that moment on that I was never going to trust the quiver in my loins again. From here on out, I date with my head. Then, maybe I can fall in love with my heart. If I were to write a news article on my current situation, the headline would be, "Vagina Town, Shut for Business." And the rest of the piece would detail the ways in which the mayor of said town can't be trusted to make fully informed decisions. She gets a bit of D, then sends all the moaning whores, also known as hormones, out to flood the streets with their sparkles and glitter, blinding the eyes of her citizens, me, to the reality of the situation. Namely, that I'm dating a narcissistic douche who will step on his own mother if it'll lift him higher. I am so done with that kind of relationship. So done. Which is why, when my heart does a little pitter-patter and my belly does a flip of excitement when I lock eyes with Tanner's cousin Ash, I try to squash my body's reaction down, and fast. He's a bigger, brawnier, and from the looks of things, a younger version of Tanner, which, since Tanner is marrying my best friend, should be a good thing. But Ash is a right, and that means he also has right money. And most likely, right arrogance, too. Something Tanner wasn't without in the beginning of his and Ruby's relationship, let me assure you. And while it turned out great for Ruby, for me, good-looking, rich, and arrogant men have only ever led to trouble and disappointment. So, one thing I finally learned after living 25 years on this earth is that I must avoid those qualities at all costs. No more rich assholes for me. No more rich assholes. It's a new resolution, so it's something I need to keep repeating in my mind as the wedding procession starts to leave the church. The closer Ash gets to me, the harder it is for me to remember the words. He's magnetic, and the way he smiles and his blue eyes crinkle at the sides has the phrase shifting to, "One more rich asshole." And it takes a lot of mental fortitude to shift it back. Thank God the man lives in another state, because I'm about to be partnered with him for the rest of the wedding celebrations, and my mental fortitude is obviously weak as fuck. I haven't even looped arms with him, and my knees are already quivering. We have photos, the meal, speeches, and of course, a dance together before the night is out. If he's even half as charming as his cousin is, I don't stand a chance. No more rich assholes. Maybe just one. No, be strong, Talia. I look up at him with a wavering smile as he offers his arm.
The cutthroat reporter Talia Adams, I presume, Ash says, his deep, rumbly voice doing wicked things to my nipples the moment it enters my ears.
Oh, God, I'm in so much trouble here. You've heard of me? That came out really breathy.
Of course.
And you're the enigmatic Mr. Wright, I presume. My eyelashes flutter involuntarily as I look up at him. I'm trying not to flirt here, but I realize I've failed at that immediately. So as I slip my hand into the crook of his offered arm, I wince and kick myself. Not an easy thing to do in unison while wearing a fitted dress and high heels.
Enigmatic, Ash chuckles. I like that part. But Mr. Wright, don't go holding my surname against me. I'm not my father, I assure you.
I've never met your father, so I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing.
He's a lot like Tanner's father, and since you wrote the scathing article on that right patriarch, I'm guessing you have a well-informed idea of the kind of man we're dealing with.
And that explains why you're off hiding in Atlanta.
You've done your research.
He drops his gaze, and I notice a dimple pop in his cheek, even though it's hidden by a nice thick beard. A beard that makes the insides of my thighs prickle at the thought of having his beautiful face buried between them. Wincing again, I shake my head and the thoughts away. This is an actual sickness. Oh, God, I wasn't stalking you online or anything. Ruby mentioned you were flying in. That's how I know.
It's fine.
He smiles and my entire reproductive system lights up. I am no longer in control of my body.
I'm in Atlanta because that's where my job is. It's also where my mother lives. And it's only a couple of hours' flight away from my sister, Camille, and this asshole.
He lifts his chin, nodding toward Tanner, as he and Ruby disappear out the main doors, the rest of us in tow. Oh, you have a secret sister, too?
Half-sister. She's from my father's second marriage. But she's no secret. She works at Wright Media like the rest of the family and hates every moment of it.
Why doesn't she leave then? Go her own way.
And risk getting cut off and written out of Dad's will the way I did?
Cut off? Written out? My brain grabs hold of that tidbit. Does this mean he isn't a rich asshole? Your dad cut you off? What did you do? I can't help the questions that fly from my mouth. It's probably none of my business, but I'm actually getting excited. If he's not rich, it means all I need to ascertain is if he's an asshole. And if he's not an asshole, that means that for once in my life, I'm attracted to someone outside my type. This could be the moment I break the cycle. Hallelujah! If this is true, I can let my lady parts lead the charge here without worry.
I refuse to fall in line. Chose to be a medical engineer instead of a cog in the right media wheel. The moment I applied to Caltech and got in, he was done with me.
Oh my gosh. I feel bad for him, but at the same time, I'm kind of praising myself. All that soul-searching over the past few months might have finally opened my eyes. I have an instant attraction to a man with morals. What is this life? I'm so excited I could fist pump and pat myself on the back. But we're having a serious conversation, so I refrain. Do you still talk to your sister?
I do, but she hides the facts so she doesn't piss off dear old dad and risk her cushy job.
He says, glancing at me.
Her own words, not mine.
And yet she hates the work.
She does. But she says she'd shovel shit every day if it meant a fat bank account and early retirement.
Now he winces.
Shit. This is a terrible conversation for a wedding recessional. Not to mention you're a reporter. Fuck, please don't write about any of this.
He turns his worried blue eyes my way.
I have no idea why this is all coming out of my mouth. You just make me nervous, and I'm vomiting words.
He claps a hand over his mouth and giggles. He giggles, and I melt. I make you nervous? I can't help but laugh. It's become abundantly clear that Ash Wright is not what I expected at all. I think that maybe, for the first time in my life, I'm interested in a regular, albeit ruggedly handsome, guy. My uterus does a happy twirl. Go me.
Yeah, incredibly.
He says, as we make our way through the huge double doors into the maze of corridors that lead us to the side of the church, where the cars are waiting.
I may share a surname with Tanner, but we're night and day personality-wise. I do not share his confidence at all when it comes to beautiful women.
You think I'm beautiful? I'm grinning and he's turning red. I am actually swooning so hard right now that I hug myself to him a little. He's mine. I'm keeping him.
Fuck. Why can't I shut up around you?
He wipes a hand over his face, grinning as he shakes his head.
And this is only going to get worse once we start drinking. Anything I say tonight needs to be off the record, okay?
Throwing my head back, I laugh, liking everything about this guy so far, and loving that my initial impression of him was so incredibly wrong. I'm not that kind of journalist, I promise. I work for BuzzFeed in the list department, so I'm no more cutthroat than a kitten with an eye patch. Your secrets are safe with me. Well, except for the beautiful woman part, I'm going to write that on a post-it and stick it to my mirror so I see it every morning when I wake up.
Yeah?
He tilts his head toward me and I nod.
In that case, give me a post-it and I'll write it for you. Beautiful badass, it'll say. You should never look in the mirror and think anything else.
Swoon. Where have you been all my life, Ash Wright? I say, looking up at him as we step out of the church. He looks down at me and smiles.
Atlanta.
With a smile that won't quit, I turn to the sound of confetti poppers going off as Ruby and Tanner walk toward the first car. The area has been cordoned off so the paparazzi can't get too close, but they're still hanging about the perimeter with their telephoto lenses, no doubt sending pictures off to their editors as fast as possible to be the first to break the story.
You know any of them?
Ash asks, as I look toward the guarded barricade where all the press is gathered. No, writing about Tanner's dad was as close as I got to a newsroom. But that was one-time thing that got me blackballed since Wright Media has so much control.
Is that something you still want to do?
He asks, stepping to the side so I can get into our car. Of course. Writing lists is the pits, but it pays the bills. Barely. And at the end of the day, what I did helped Tanner help Camille, so it was worth it to see everyone happy. I've messed up a lot in my life and my career. I've been a subpar friend and a terrible judge of character, but publishing that article was probably the only great thing I ever did. I stand by it wholeheartedly. I flash him a half smile as he settles into the back of the car beside me, and we're closed in.
I'm sorry my family is keeping your talent down,
he says, his gaze softening as sincerity coats his words. For some reason, his candor makes me blush and want to change the subject. Oh, it's fine. I wasn't going anywhere fast anyway, if I'm honest. No big deal.
It was a very big deal, Talia,
he says, placing his hand on top of mine.
Just look at Camille.
He points out the window, where we can see Camille laughing as her carer helps get her and her wheelchair loaded into the purpose-built van.
Then look at Tanner and Ruby.
I shift my gaze and find them staring at each other lovingly before pressing their lips together for one last kiss before they get into the first car that will all follow to the reception venue.
You see how easy they smile? What you did gave them that. You're a hero.
A hero in a really weird dress, I say, deflecting while I twist my hips to show off the pink tulle half skirt Darren insisted we all wear, along with our matching stilettos, of course. I love Darren, but drag queens should not be allowed to choose bridesmaid dresses or shoes. I can barely walk. I'm petrified I'm going to trip on this tulle and break my neck. Ash releases a hearty chuckle.
In that case, I think you need to give the weird half-skirt to me,
he says, holding out his hand before looking up.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?